No.
Okay. Hi, I'm Jim.
I'm Carol Hansen. Hi.
Hi, Carol.
Oh, I've been running all day long. I went to that Zone 3 out at the
Did you go to the dam. Tour? How many people showed up?
There were quite a few. What's his name? Gearing didn't come.
No, that's me.
Oh, that's you?
Yeah.
Well, you have to forgive me. I don't know everyone by their face and their name.
Okay, thank you. All right, good evening, everyone. This is Thursday, March 17, 2011, Zone 3 Advisory Committee meeting, and this is a reconvention of a meeting that was convened earlier today at the Lopez Water Treatment Plant. It was adjourned there later in the morning, and we're reconvening it tonight at 6:30. And to start off with, we have a new gentleman that's going to help us out tonight by the name of John Diodati with the county, and he'll introduce himself and talk to us about committee appointments whenever he's ready. Mr. Diodati. Yes.
Make a couple of introductory remarks regarding Mr. Diodati and his new assignment and some of the transitions. As way of introduction for some of our new committee members, my name is Pablo Ogren. I am the Public Works Director and have been working with Zone 3 for a few decades at a number of different capacities, and it's always, an enjoyable experience. And what we have today is John Diodati is going to be taking over essentially as the liaison with the Zone 3 Advisory Committee. John comes with more of the business background as opposed to Dean Benedix, who is one of the engineers. He's our utility division manager. A couple of the reasons why the change has been prompted is that the Nacimiento project is now operating. And so we're making a transition on that from a project focus with John Hollenbeck, who is the project manager, to now an operating focus. And with Dean, and because he is our utility division manager, he is now taking over as the major liaison with the Nacimiento Commission. John, and with the business background, was the prime candidate at this time then to make the transition into Zone 3 because we have completed our major capital projects over the last 10 years, both the rebuild of the seismic project as well as the water treatment plant. And some of our focus at this time is really with respect to the business relationships between the county and the different agencies. We've had a number of meetings over the past 6 to 12 months about business issues, decision-making issues, and we've had some discussions regarding how the Nacimiento Commission model works as compared to the Zone 3 Advisory Committee, and we anticipate in the coming year we'll have some of those business items also for your advisory committee's consideration. The point being, though, is that with John and his business background, we'll then be able to help us work through some of the business-related issues as a focus as we proceed through the next year. So I look forward to this new assignment for John. I'm sure he's going to succeed as he has done on all of his assignments with the Public Works Department. Prior to San Luis Obispo County Public Works, he was working with USDA, one of the individuals who, when local agencies obtain loan packages and loan and grant packages from USDA, those individuals who represent USDA, John previously had one of those roles. He's also been critical in the department with some of our work back in D.C. when we go back there on an annual basis, and so he helps us with our legislative issues as well. And with enough talking about John then, we'll turn the microphone over to him so that the business can be conducted. But I wanted to make those few introductory remarks.
All right. Well, thank you, Mr. Ogren, for that. Mr. Diodati.
Thank you. My name is John Diodati. I'm happy to be here tonight and introduce myself and learn what the advisory board does and how I'll be able to facilitate your discussions. That was agenda item number 5, I believe. That was my understanding. So I believe you can move into item number 6 if you'd like.
All right. Before we do, that item is number 5 was entitled Committee Appointments, and we do have a couple of new folks on the committee tonight, Ms. Carol Hansen to my left,
yes,
and Mr. Chris Vardis to my right, Ms. Hansen from Oceano and Mr. Vardis from Pismo Beach.
Correct.
And I'm curious whether these folks, have they been sent through the board process and we're all squared away there?
Yes.
Great. Okay. Well, welcome aboard to everyone who's new
Thank
here,
you.
Including Mr. Diodati. All right. Has everyone had a chance to look at the meeting minutes of January? Oh, no. Let's call to order and get a roll call. Let's get a roll call, and that would be you, Mr. Diodati. You can call the roll. See who's here.
Okay. We have Advisory Committee Member Henson.
Here.
And Vardis. Nichols.
Here.
And Chair Gehring. Okay, let the record show that Costello and Wallace are not present, as well as Runnels.
I wonder if our...
I believe this is, and they, none of their alternates are present.
Mr. Waggy's here, I think.
Yeah, he's my alternate.
Okay.
Okay. He's here.
Okay. And also, before we get started, we did have a tour this morning of the water treatment plant. We were going to call the meeting if there was a quorum, and we determined at 9:25 there wasn't a quorum.
Okay. Thank you for that. All right. Now to the meeting minutes of January 20th, 2011. And anybody have a chance to read them? If so, any comments, corrections?
Only one correction. I noticed at the very end of the meeting that indicated our next scheduled meeting was to be held in Grover Beach today, so we're in the wrong place. We ought to all go quick. So with that correction, I would make a motion that we approve the minutes with that one correction.
All right. And I guess what I'll do is I'll second that as chair, since I was here for that meeting, and the two newer members probably would have to abstain. But any comments on the minutes before we go forward here?
No.
Anyone from the audience have a comment on the minutes before we move forward? Seeing none, all right, all in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Are there any opposed or abstentions?
Abstention.
We've got two abstentions, I believe, Ms. Henson and Mr. Vardis. All right, we are to the operations report. I think Mr. Coleman's in the audience. And whenever you're ready, Mr. Ron Coleman.
Good evening, everyone. I'm Ron Coleman, the South County Operations Superintendent for at the Lopez Water Treatment Plant. And Dean has asked me to give the summary operations report at tonight's meeting. So looking through the minutes from the previous meetings, it looks like he... goes over the lake information, some water treatment plant information, and we have one other item. So we'll start with the water plant operations, item 8A. And by the way, I hope everybody that showed up for the tour enjoyed themselves and got an idea what.
Yes, in fact, I had to leave untimely, and I meant to stay and thank everyone because that was very informative, and I enjoyed it very much.
I'll pass that on to Craig. He does a pretty good job.
Yeah.
Thank you. Water treatment plant. The plant production itself is 4.3 MGD. State water is 1.4 MGD, million gallons a day. We have all five membrane racks running and operational, 48-hour runs, basically. End run turbidities are less than 0.02, which is quite good. The lake... Some information on the Lopez Lake. The elevation, today's elevation is 510.17. Storage is 38,769 acre feet with the capacity of 78.8. Just a little information. I looked up the same elevation and percentage from last year at this time. So last year it was 498.85 and 62%. So we've 11.32 foot over above from last year and 16.8% higher than last year. And I'm fairly confident we're going to get to at least 80%. 80% would be 5'11". That's less than a foot. And with the rains that we theoretically have coming, I'd like to see us get an 80% range. It just looks better, sounds better. Any questions on any of those items?
Ron, I didn't catch the downstream release. How are we doing on that?
I didn't say it. It's the downstream release is 1.3 MGD and has been for quite some time. Yes.
Okay, thank you for that. Questions for Mr. Coleman from committee members? Ms. Hansen, anything as well?
No.
No question, but I do have a comment. Understand the report considerably better after having had the tour of the plant.
Yes. So funny how those things click when you can visually see
something. It helped tremendously, and I thank you for the tour this morning.
Oh, you're welcome. I'll pass that on. I do have one more thing that Dean wanted me to go over with you guys, and it's on page 9 of your packet, including the first page. Not all the pages are numbered, but he wanted me to go over the annual release projection for this year and where we're at and where we anticipate the surplus water may be. So it would be this page.
I think we got it here.
Okay, so just real quickly, we're looking at the column on the far right, 2010. The line across the top, 4,200 acre feet, that's the safe yield for the lake. And the projection, the water year for Zone 3 ends March 31st, so another 10, 13, 14 days, another 2 weeks. So the projection is at the end of March 31st, the releases to the creek would have been 3,487.7 acre feet, which means that's a difference of roughly 712 acre feet from the safe yield. So that would be 712 acre feet that would go into the surplus formula. Dean wanted me also to point out that the estimates and projections for February and March were based on 4.0 MGD releases, and it's quite a bit less than that. I did some quick math on the way over here, and we're actually 1.3 MGD all February, and it looks like we'll be there all of March. So if that holds true, we would actually only have released 3,000 acre feet into the creek, so that would give us about 1,200 acre feet available for the surplus water calculations.
Okay. Thank you for that, Ron. And to just briefly go over that for the newer members on the committee, the 4,200 acre feet that you see on that horizontal line across it towards the top of the chart, that is the what we'd ordinarily call a contractual amount for the maximum amount we are obligated to release downstream for agricultural and environmental purposes. And we've released more than that in the past, but of late we've had our interim downstream release schedule in place, and because of that, we've saved quite a bit of water. And it looks like we're going to save a little bit more than what we had anticipated earlier, because we're not releasing 4 MGD as yet. We're still back at 1.3 MGD, so that's going to result in a little bit more savings than shown. So perhaps as much as 800 or 900 acre feet for this current year. Is that close, Mr. Coleman?
It's definitely close.
About the 1,200.
It should be up to closer to 1,200.
1,200. Okay, thank you. All right, so questions for Mr. Coleman on that?
None.
Mr. Vardis or Mr. Nichols? Not seeing any. And before you step away, Ron, let's see if anyone from the audience has got anything they'd like to ask about. Seeing none. Okay, well, thank you for that, Mr. Coleman.
Thank you.
All right. Katie Drexage, I think you're up for HCP status and schedule.
Yes. Thank you. I'm Katie Drexage. I'm with the Public Works Environmental Division. And seeing that we have two new members, I thought I'd go over generally what this project is about before I read the staff report. Arroyo Grande Creek provides habitat for federally listed species. In particular, we're looking at the steelhead, which is a type of fish, California red-legged frog, and tidewater goby. These species are protected by the Federal Endangered Species Act, and in order to basically impact them in any way, you need a permit. So this is a permitting process we're going through for the operation of Lopez Dam. When we release water into the creek and we alter the releases, that could impact the habitat downstream for the frog and the fish and goby. So we're in the process of getting a permit for those activities. We are working with the National Marine Fisheries Service, or NMFS. That's the acronym you'll see in a lot of these reports for steelhead. And then we're also working with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service for the California red-legged frog and tidewater goby. And with that, I'll move on to the report. So,
thank you.
Sure. This report is covering activities that have occurred since the last meeting, which was in January 20th, 2011. And we cover the same topics every time. We're trying to keep it pretty standardized, but I'm only going to go over the topics that I have updates for right now. So that's why in the staff report you'll see a few of these headings with no changes as of yet. So I'm going to go ahead and highlight the ones we have changes for since January 20th. And starting off, we conducted some steelhead habitat surveys above Lopez Dam. National Marine Fisheries Service requested that we do so. This information is going to help them process their permit so they can conduct their analysis when they look at our project as a whole. And we hired Mark Allen with Thomas Reed Payne and Associates to conduct that habitat suitability index. And so that Mark Allen looked at the habitat above the dam, and he basically qualified the habitat and produced a report, which, as you see, it's available on the San Luis Obispo County Water Resources website if you would like to look at it. And we've passed that report along to the National Marine Fisheries Service as they requested, and they're looking at it right now. And they're going to get back to us once they've been able to take a look at it. It's a pretty lengthy report, so. But I plan to follow up with National Marine Fisheries Service next week or the following week to see how they're doing with the review of that report. And the report is important because National Marine Fisheries Service has said basically they'll help move us along in our habitat conservation plan process, our permit that we're seeking from them. Once they have that information, we can go ahead and start moving forward with that HCP effort. And the highlight of tonight's update would be that we've been working on a flow regime model with National Marine Fisheries for quite some time. And this is, you know, we're looking at the flows that are being released from the dam, at what rates of release are going to meet the district's needs for their municipalities and the habitat needs of the species that we're covering with the habitat conservation plan. And we finally came to some agreement on a flow regime model that we proposed. Following my staff report, there's a letter from National Marine Fisheries Service, and the second paragraph, the first sentence, is really the good news. And they say that generally the water release schedule that the county proposes for creating and maintaining base flows and passage flows in Arroyo Grande Creek appears to represent a reasonable basis for developing a conservation program for the steelhead. And that still sounds pretty vague, but that's actually really good news. So that means we can move forward. So we can actually take that flow model and put it into our habitat conservation plan and move forward. So this is exciting to us because we've been working on this flow model for quite a while. It's involved a lot of modeling with an engineering firm that we've been consulting with. So,
I think Katie understates it a little bit. This is an extremely significant milestone associated with the overall HCP efforts. It's been a long time in coming. there's still obviously many, many issues that have to be worked on. But just as Ron Coleman showed us, the creek releases under the interim downstream release plan schedule, this flow regime is it entirely consistent or just substantially consistent with what we're doing right now?
Substantially. I would say substantially consistent.
Yeah. And so in terms of having worked on this issue, you know, literally for the better part of a decade and having environmental review and everything else done, our number one concern was whether or not the resource agencies were going to develop an expectation that we made so much releases that it cut into the municipal deliveries. So that was number one concern. This does not do that. And then it appears that it will allow for we have this recent declaration of surplus water was, I don't know, Jim, probably the first declaration of surplus water in the better part of the decade or?
Since 98, I think.
Yeah, since 98. And so this flow regime also should be able to still provide for some surplus water in the future, you know, depending on what kind of overall what the year looks like. The flow regime is different in dry years as opposed to wet years, and it's different depending on what the actual level is in the, water level is in the lake. So there's a lot of different conditions that could cause a different flow regime. But still, the ability to predict that having surplus water available in future years, you know, we're much more optimistic now than we have been in really quite some time.
And we did send one minor additional technical memorandum to National Marine Fisheries Service regarding the rates at which we'll slow the water releases, the ramping rates. So we sent that to them per their request. But that's not going to change the overall flow model. We just wanted to iron out some questions they had during a conference call back in December. And another issue we've been working on is the habitat conservation boundary, and as a result of getting the habitat suitability index or the surveys conducted above the dam and this flow regime model, National Marine Fisheries Service has assured us that now they will be able to weigh in and recommend where our boundary should extend, what the limits should be of this habitat conservation plan. And so we anticipate hearing back from them once they are able to review those surveys that were conducted above the dam. And the same goes for our NEPA document, our National Environmental Policy Act document. That is federal environmental law that both the National Marine Fishery Service and Fish and Wildlife Service must address as a part of their permitting policy. And they will be deciding on which type of document we'll need to use for this project, whether it'll be an environmental assessment or an environmental impact statement. And using the information they have now, they'll be able to make that determination. And that's a pretty important determination because the environmental assessment is a shorter document, takes less time. Environmental impact statement takes considerably longer time frame associated with it. So, again, we're waiting to hear back from National Marine Fisheries Service once they are able to review those surveys that were conducted above the dam. And conducting a peer review of the HCP process and technical work, we consulted with, or we actually partnered with H.T. Harvey & Associates. We requested that they provide a detailed review and analysis of the current draft HCP, the various issues that have been raised by the agencies over the years, the numerous future tasks required, and the goals of the district relative to the HCP. This HCP, there's a lot of project history. We've been working on it for, as Paavo said earlier, about a decade. So we basically, you know, we know we're about to move forward and really get another draft ready for review for the agencies. So we wanted to work with somebody who's been through the process, who has a lot of experience. And so we hired H.T. Harvey & Associates to look at our process, look at our files, basically, and tell us what we can anticipate upcoming issues may be. How complete are we? Are we, you know, are we 20% of the way done? Are we 70% of the way done? And H.T. Harvey & Associates, they are an environmental firm. This particular branch we're working with, they're out of Eureka. And they have a lot of experience with working with agencies and with local government agencies as well. So they're very, very in tune with what we're facing in our project in particular. They've worked on other projects involving dams. So they prepared a peer review memorandum, and we recently received it, and we're still reviewing it. We anticipate being able to review it, possibly comment on it, and then they're going to present their findings at a Zone 3 Advisory Council meeting.
I might add a comment on that. You know, in general, because I spoke with Mark Hutchinson, who's Katie's boss and our environmental division manager, and as a real quick overview, they did identify certain sections of the HCP, the draft HCP, that they thought had room for improvement. And that's not too, you know, really all that surprising considering its current draft and the fact that the resource agencies have focused their review on certain chapters already but really not given us a lot of feedback on other chapters. And my feedback to Mark was, well, okay, how about then if we combine the comments that we get from H.D. Harvey with some of the upcoming comments that we're going to be getting from the resource agency, you know, and where they match up, where the resource agency is really asking us for revisions, you know, and it's consistent with what H.D. Harvey is, then let's focus on those sections. H.D. Harvey is doing a good job in telling us what to anticipate, but, you know, let's make the edits in response to the resource agency comments because that's going to be more focused then on, you know, in order to get the final permit and everything. So I think that's a, you know, basically good strategy. And so we haven't scheduled then, of course, H.T. Harvey to come out, but I want to see if we can get resource agency comments first in so that we have them all together.
Okay, thank you for that. So questions on on the issue of the status of the HCP?
Oh, I have one other last item.
All right.
Just to confirm, Anthony Spina with National Marine Fishery Service will, as far as we know at this point, will be attending the May meeting. And if you would like to prepare any questions for him in advance, we could submit them to him so he's prepared.
Okay. That's a good idea. So what would be a good date for those questions to be in, and who should they go to?
May 19th is the next meeting, I believe.
So if we could shoot for May 1st to Katie.
Okay, May 1st to myself would be great.
Okay, all right. Okay, questions to Ms. Drexage on the HCP status?
Yeah, excuse me, I have a couple questions, and, you know, these are going to be very basic questions. I'm just trying to get up to speed here, and I know the issue of the Zone 3 and the HCP has been brought forward to City Council of Pismo Beach. We've had some discussion. But I'm just curious, as far as the flow regime model that you described, is that the only conservation strategy element, or are there other take and avoidance measures that are required as part of the HCP?
There will be other measures included in the conservation program itself, maybe removing barriers along the way, kind of a mitigation, as mitigation, enhancing habitat where we can, possibly paying into some sort of a fund for other mitigation-type activities. But other than that, that's the gist of it right now.
Okay. I know in the past there's been some discussion with the city about possible storage enhancement projects. I think one of those entailed some type of inflatable dam or bladder device. Is that still on the table, and if so, does the HCP and the flow regime model, does that preclude or affect the ability to implement any of those projects?
I'm going to do a two-part. And, you know, Dwayne has sort of had the lead on the actual looking into that project. So your question is really not project-specific. It relates to the HCP. But in the event that there is some, you know, feedback from Dwayne as well on that project alternative, be helpful. With respect to the HCP, I would think that we could continue to proceed with the HCP based on the existing storage and, you know, the existing set of circumstances right now, that any modifications to that would be specifically addressed with the project applications associated with the, you know, any modifications. So I anticipate that there might be some incremental, you know, environmental releases because we have some incremental storage and we have some incremental benefits. yeah, I would anticipate that we should expect that. But I think that they would all be addressed as part of the actual project application for that inflatable dam.
Okay, thank you. One last question. The basis for the HCP, is that just that was a requirement pursuant to those species being listed and the resource agencies becoming interested, or was it based on a specific project action?
That's sort of the question of the century in a way. It's certainly not based on any specific project application that we've initiated. The main project, of course, that we did in the last 10 years was the Lopez Dam Seismic Remediation Project. And that project itself had its own biological opinion and biological assessment and all the environmental review that was necessary. And in fact, it's a little bit of an intriguing question in terms of why was it that that biological opinion and biological assessment didn't just cover the operations of the dam. The response that we have from National Marine Fisheries Services is that biological review was simply associated with the seismic strengthening of the dam and not to do with its ongoing operations. And so that's why he's separating that particular project away from the HCP process. The basics of the HCPC process, where we got tied in, is with the water rights permit, and it was initiated through a challenge by what I think it's the
California Sport Fishing Protection Alliance.
And so they challenged us, and sort of associated with that, the State Water Board staff was also looking at our water rights permit and telling us that we weren't really operating the storage of the reservoir and the releases consistent with the permit, that in a way, well, it's no big deal, but we have to modify the permit anyhow. And during that permit modification process, we're going to have to address the endangered species issues that the Fishing Alliance was bringing up. Well, so these two different issues sort of came together as associated with the water rights permit. And it's one of those ones where you look at it and it's like, well, how do you slice and dice that? How is it that we got brought into an appeal on our water rights permit and then also brought into an environmental issue at the same time? And I'm not sure that it's really all that easily explainable, but why it makes sense to me is when we look back at the Mono Lake decision, because that was a water rights appeal, and what the judicial determinations were is that the State Water Board, in issuing and having an ongoing water rights permit for Southern California, that in fact endangered species issues and endangered species takes were not being adequately addressed, and they directed the State Water Board to address the endangered species issue. And so it was a judicial determination that directed the State Water Board to do something that, you know, the State Water Board had not previously been doing. So the judgment involved is that when the State Water Board sees similar issues, challenges on environmental, challenges on HCP, and they see their permit up and questionable, that they then bring together the issues and say, okay, county, if you want to get, you know, your water rights permit revised, and we're telling you you need to, then you will also be engaging in this HCP process in order to address endangered species. So, you know, in summary, we know that judicial decisions have told the State Water Board that they have to address endangered species and that it has to be part of the water rights permit. How the processes come together that pulled us into that is the part that's kind of difficult to explain. But we know it's their authority. They're telling us that we have to do it. And, you know, we're certainly being advised by our legal counsel that we have to do it. But it's not based on, again, an application that we submitted, like for the Lopez Dam seismic project.
Thank you, Mr. Odrum. Thank you, Chairman Gehring.
Oh, you know, there's one other aspect to that issue, and that is that in the past there have been dead steelhead discovered in and around the creek, and it was possible, although not likely in my opinion, that our operations could have affected those endangered species. One of the things that comes out of the HCP once it's an operational and issued HCP is an incidental take permit, so that we are protected from any sanctions that might arise out of incidentally harming endangered species if we have the HCP in effect. So with that, anything else to address us on that issue from either anybody over there?
I agree with your concluding remarks there, Chairman Gehring, that certainly it's hard to understand how we get into the process sometimes. We understand authorities, but the bottom line, that benefit of having an incidental take permit and having coverage in the, you know, in the case of a taking of the endangered species or its habitat is extremely beneficial to us.
We're looking for more questions for Mr. Ogren or Ms. Drexage.
No. Not
Mr. Nichols? No. Ms. Henson?
No, thank you.
No. And I guess, I see someone about to stand up in the audience. Mr. Waggy.
Thank you very much. I'm Ed Waggy, the alternate for Pismo Beach. Just a couple of questions. Will the ag usage have any impact on our progress on getting this done, since I understand in the past that's been an issue? Is it separable, or is it going to be affecting us in some way?
We've been told by National Marine Fisheries Service that if agricultural pumping had an effect on the creek levels itself, then that would be for them to follow up with individual farmers on that topic.
So that will not be an impediment for us. Roughly, I realize it depends on flows and all that stuff, but how much difference between the proposed flow model and what we've been releasing as a result of the fish kills, basically keep ourselves out of trouble?
It's fairly similar because it's going to be based on the natural environment. So when we have heavy rains, basically when we don't have a lot of rain, we're not going to have big releases because there's not going to be much water coming into the creek.
Right.
One of the big triggers is the Lopez Creek above the dam. So we're looking at the flow in from that creek into the reservoir. We're basing our releases based on that inflow.
Well, I'm glad we're making progress. Thank you very much.
Sure.
Katie, if you could clarify on that, and I may be wrong on that, but my impression is that when the flows pick up above the dam, that we will likely be releasing attraction flows downstream to help out in bringing the fish back up into the creek from the ocean.
Correct.
Okay. And then by the same token, though, even though that particular part of the operation of the HCP might release more water, the other part would be that in dry periods, we'll be releasing less than we do today.
I believe so.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. Chisholm.
Thank you, Chairman Gehring. Dwayne Chisholm, Director of Public Works, City Engineer with Pismo Beach. I just want to make an observation that I've had since Katie's been assigned to this project over the last several months. We've had significant advancement in the Habitat Conservation Plan. So I just wanted to acknowledge her for her work and her effort there, because for a long period of time, this project was somewhat stagnant, and we have had some very, very significant improvements in the last 6 to 8 months or so.
Thank you for that, and I wholeheartedly agree. But, Dwayne, before you go too far, there was a question regarding the spillway raise. Could you just give us a brief...
It's anticipated that the rubber dam project would provide some enhancement for domestic water use, and it would not harm or impact the downstream releases of the habitat conservation aspect of the operation. So to a certain extent, the project has the obligation to create no harm as it moves forward.
And timing-wise, we're expecting a report to come across our desk soon.
Soon. It's actually they're working on it now. Stetson Engineers working on it. Water System Consulting is managing the project, and we should see something. I'm just guessing, probably summertime or so.
Great. Thank you. All right. Questions for Mr. Chisholm or Ms. Drexage or Mr. Ogren?
I had a question for Mr. Chisholm. Is it possible that project could provide more flexibility from an operational perspective in meeting the flow regime requirements?
It could. More than likely, though, is going to provide a certain amount of water at the top of the dam during certain periods, and that water would probably get used very quickly. So it'll regulate the amount of water that's in the dam per se, so there may be more water there than there would be otherwise without the project. But as far as the outflow, is going to be consistent. So the inflow and the outflow are going to be the same. There's just going to be a change in the reservoir levels as associated with the project.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chisholm. And Mr. Nichols, anything?
Nope.
No? Ms. Henson, any questions at this point?
No, thank you. He handled it.
Okay, have we cleared out all the questions from the audience? Anyone else from the audience have a question before we move on? Okay. Seeing none, it looks like we are probably to Mr. Ogren regarding surplus water.
Yes.
Did I pick the right person?
You did. I'm Doug Bird tonight as well. So on surplus water, at the last advisory committee meeting, you recommended to the Board of Supervisors a resolution. Well, two things. One is that the board approve surplus water for the 9-10 water year and 805 acre feet. And that to credit that against current water year delivery so that that surplus could actually be used in the upcoming summer. Normally, we're supposed to declare surplus water in April, available then through the following March. But we had erred and we did not do so. And so the board took action and adopted a resolution that mitigates that so that that surplus water is available in the upcoming year. They adopted the resolution, and so we're all good and consistent with last advisory committee meeting. The resolution also took an additional step, and that is that rather than having to go back to the Board of Supervisors to get surplus water approved on an annual basis, they delegated that authority to us. Essentially, they delegated the authority to the Public Works Director to do the annual calculation. The calculation is driven by the contract, so there's really not discretion in the calculation, which is, you know, it makes it an administrative matter, and so it's sort of like, yeah, the Board of Supervisors should delegate it. For us, the Public Works Department, to do the calculation for approval of the Zone 3 Advisory Committee, and then it's done. I think it's going to help for more timeliness, more efficiency. It's also, again, consistent with some of the discussions that we've had with representatives of your agencies about the delegation of powers from the Board of Supervisors to the Advisory Committee, which is moving more consistent with the Nacimiento Commission model and how our, you know, relationships are progressing or evolving with the cities and the other agencies. So it's a delegation of power, again, for Public Works to do the calculations, bring it to the Advisory Committee to get it approved, and then it's set and it's done. In the event that, you know, staff and the advisory committee don't have concurrence on it, that you don't like our calculations or whatever might be the reason in the future, then it would go to the Board of Supervisors for consideration. But, again, it's a contractually driven calculation. It's pretty straightforward. So it's hard to imagine that those type of differences would come up in the future. What, where you think then that with Ron, you might – oh. Ron's gone. He had indicated maybe about 1,200 acre feet of surplus water in the coming year, just because we'll only be at about, 3,000 acre feet of downstream deliveries. That combined with the 800 acre feet, then we would anticipate at the next advisory committee, we would bring forward that action then for a surplus water calculation that would be about 2,000 acre feet.
All right. Thank you for that. So that'll come back to this committee for final approval for
That's correct.
April or May?
May.
Yeah. And probably it goes to TAC before that, I suppose.
Correct.
Okay, thank you. Okay, questions for Mr. Ogren on surplus water?
Nope.
Mr. Vardis, anything?
Nope.
Ms. Henson,
no.
Anything? Anyone from the audience have a question for Mr. Ogren on the surplus water issue? Seeing none, well, then we're ready to move on to emergency surplus supplemental state water, which I think probably, again, is Mr. Ogren.
That's correct. A little bit of background on the emergency supplemental state water. This was originally initiated about 18 months ago based on the request of some of the local agencies here, not all. And we've been working with the Central Coast Water Authority and the Department of Water Resources. The Department of Water Resources has approved in some situations allowing two state water contractors, that would be Central Coast Water Authority representing Santa Barbara County and San Luis Obispo County Flood Control District to swap water for capacity and basically do some short-term exchanges. So the proposal that has been in front of DWR for a while now would be that in exchange for utilizing 1,500 acre-feet of CCWA's capacity in bringing down some of the flood control district's excess state water, that CCWA would get 3,000 acre-feet of some of San Luis Obispo County Flood Control's excess state water. The purpose of use would be emergency purposes, either to help fight off seawater intrusion, which would be allowable by some of your agencies reducing groundwater pumping, or by another water supply emergency that's declared under the Water Code. I think it's Section 350, declared by the Board of Supervisors. But the substance of it is that then we would, as the Flood Control District in delivering Lopez water, we would switch it out with some state water, still meet our Lopez contractual obligations to all the agencies, and be able to store 1,500 acre-feet more behind Lopez Dam. The benefit with 1,250 of that acre-feet dedicated really to the Zone 3 contractors, 250 acre-feet available for other agencies in essentially drought periods. That's the sum of the background of the proposal, again, first driven on the idea that a reduction in groundwater pumping, you know, on the south coast here, and concerns about seawater intrusion. And then the benefit means that in any given year, in addition to your Lopez entitlements and whatever surplus water might be available, you would also have availability of this emergency water. And in a drought period, that might be taken over a year or multiple years, but in essence, it would allow more supplies provided through the flood control district in a drought period, maybe when groundwater levels have come down. But in any case, not a long-term supply of water, a short-term supply of water, and enhancing our overall ability to deliver water in any given year. The Department of Water Resources right now is still under review with the agreement. We had originally anticipated trying to do it in 2010. They're under review. We have a negative deck that has been reviewed, an environmental report. But some of the questions locally on water quality testing has come up. Also, the State Water Project this year is at a relatively high level of 70% of their deliveries, high in recent times, at least when they've had restrictions in pumping of the Delta due to environmental reasons. So DWR, I think, is looking at it closely because they're saying, what's the emergency? You know, water deliveries are good this year. It's been a wet year. And what we're doing right now is we're referring back to the Santa Maria Groundwater Basin litigation and providing them information out of that, because the idea of trying to develop some emergency supplies really isn't to do with a given year. And even though this year is a, you know, wet normal wet year, it really doesn't have to do with a given year, but it has to do with that, you know, that year in the future. We might find DWR responding then saying that, okay, they'll approve the agreement for a one-time basis. They might say something when State Water Project deliveries are under 50%. So they're looking at it. We're providing them more information out of the groundwater basin litigation to show that it was really that evidence that drives the need to improve our reliability, and not, you know, short-term testing on some of the Century wells. And anyways, they're under further review. They might give us direction that could be a multiple to that. They will approve it in a given year, but not this year, under certain circumstances. They might say that they want us to revise the environmental document to bring in more of the information out of the Santa Maria groundwater litigation. In any case, you know, I guess the bottom line conclusion is it's still pending.
Pavo, the origin of the water, is that one-time allocation out of the 15,000 acre-feet of unallocated state water? Is that where it comes from?
Yes.
Okay. And even at 70% delivery, there's plenty of capacity?
That's correct.
Okay. Questions for Mr. Ogan on that issue? Ms. Hansen, anything?
No.
Well, those were mine. Anyone from the audience? Questions? Yes, sir. Please stand up, tell us who you are and what your issue is.
Good evening, Mr. Chairman, committee members. My name is Jeff Edwards. I have a number of questions, I posed a number of questions at the January meeting, and I haven't received any answers on those questions, so perhaps Mr. Ogren can make notes and respond to the ones I'll pose this evening. First of all, I'm curious, GEI Consultants is preparing the most recent seawater intrusion evaluation. I'm wondering if that report is done and when it might be available to the public. So that's my first question. Secondly, the negative declaration that was prepared for this water swap covered through June 30th of this year. And so that's rapidly approaching, and wondering if they will be preparing the next ND, and wondering about the potential conflict of interest, because it's my understanding that GEI prepared the negative declaration for the CCWA. They're the same folks doing the consulting relative to seawater intrusion. So I'm curious about that. Also, the Pier Avenue well, that was kind of the precursor of this whole seawater intrusion issue, I'm wondering, it was rumored that well was no longer going to be relied upon for data in connection with the seawater intrusion evaluation. So I'm curious if that's true at all. Paavo mentioned the review by DWR, and I'm curious if the goal is to still have them complete their review by the end of this month, which is what the tentative schedule was. Also, given that it's my understanding that the emergency state project water is going to be delivered directly to non-state project water subcontractors, namely Arroyo Grande and Grover Beach, with Oceano and Pismo being the actual state project water subcontractors. And the question really is, what compensation will be provided to the actual state project water subcontractors, again, Oceano and Pismo, in connection with that? Because, of course, they've been paying for this water. So those are a handful of questions. I'm also curious, thanks for the tour this morning. That was quite informative. And I'm wondering if the state project water that's delivered, there was some reference to 1.4 MGD, is that water stored in the terminal reservoir, or does it actually go behind the dam now? And it's my understanding, again, that the state project water, this emergency water, will be delivered directly to Zone 3 members, so it really won't be stored behind the reservoir in any case. So perhaps that can be expanded upon. I think that should do it. Should do it. I appreciate the responses. Thanks.
Okay, thank you for that. There are a couple of those that I could address myself. One would be the GEI study is in progress, and it will be presented to the court by late in April, and after that it will become a public document. Insofar as the Pier Avenue well goes, I'm unaware of any change in the status of that well. And the 1.4 MGD of state water project water is delivered into the pipeline system and not into the terminal reservoir or the lake. And the others, I do not know off the top of my head the answers to, and I'll defer to Mr. Ogren if he wants to answer any of those or defer them. That would be fine.
Certainly, I can answer a number of them. On the 1.4 MGD, first off, Jeff, were you meaning the terminal reservoir or the clear water reservoir?
I thought it was the terminal reservoir, but apparently, Mr. Garing, I think you just answered that question.
Yeah, it does go through the clear water reservoir,
the
covered reservoir, right. but not the terminal reservoir. That actually leads into the question about some of the cost sharing associated with state water versus Lopez water. All the state water participants that utilize the Lopez system for the delivery of state water pay what is called a wheeling charge. And that wheeling charge is calculated based on now we have more molecules of water going through the pipelines, and it essentially changes the cost-sharing percentages. It's a little bit tricky in the calculation because our state water contracts are separate from our Lopez contracts, and so we have to do some sort of bigger calculations associated with those relationships and then get into the details for each of the agencies that take Lopez water or state water. But those are called the wheeling charges, and so it compensates essentially the Lopez contractors when state water is going through the Lopez system. And that would include then that point where it enters it at the terminal reservoir and then through the pipelines, but nothing associated with the treatment plant itself, the terminal reservoir, or the dam itself. And those are called wheeling charges and have been subject to lots of court decisions and are pretty standard practice when what we might call a foreign water flows through a system of another entity. Let's see. That okay, so one of the questions then was, you know, monetary compensation between state water contractors. And the with the respect to GEI consultants, GEI also did do the negative deck associated with bringing in this emergency water. I would not have any reason to believe that there's any conflicts of interest associated with that. The question regarding the deliveries identified in the project of the original negative deck is correct that those deliveries would have to be done by June 30th of 2011. In the event that the Department of Water Resources sent us the agreement approved today, I would have a hard time envisioning that we'd be able to get it on our board agenda, CCWA's board agenda, and to be able to make sure all the deliveries are done by June 30th of 2011. We need to start those deliveries in March in order to be able to do in March, April, May, and June. If we did get that agreement, then that 1,500 acre feet would be reduced by an amount that we could get delivered by June 30th. That's why I'm kind of anticipating, because there's been a little bit of a stall in the discussions, that DWR is probably looking at it from the standpoint of wanting to get a better understanding of what's going on in our basins and the result of the litigation, and then we'll be talking to them about revised dates and then having to update the environmental document. That's, you know, in the realm of reasonable expectations. I'm not sure if that's exactly how it's going to come out or if they're just going to send us the document and then we're going to do what we can between now and June 30th. Anyways, that addresses the scheduling issues and some of those implications. Chairman Gehring addressed the Pier Avenue well. And was that pretty much everything? Yeah, okay.
Okay, thank you for that. Any other questions from the audience on this issue? This issue being the emergency supplemental state water? Seeing none, how about on the committee? Did that raise anything else anyone would like to bring up?
Nope.
Okay, seeing none. Well, let's move on then. Fiscal year 2011-12 capital projects. Who's going to handle that since Mr. Trott does? Oh, he is here.
Yes.
Good. Mr. Tom Trott.
Hi, I'm Tom Trott, County Public Works Utilities Division. I have two items to cover. The first one is more of an update for the chlorine dioxide generation system at the Lopez Water Treatment Plant. The project, just as a little bit of a background, is a project to replace or really upgrade the existing chlorine dioxide generation system at the Lopez plant, which is the primary disinfectant system for the Lopez water. There's been a series of issues and malfunctions with that, and we've come to the end of that and are now replacing, upgrading it. At your last meeting, you approved that project, and as an update, we went to the Board of Supervisors, and a contract was approved by the Board of Supervisors with DuPont to go ahead and start that project. And a tentative schedule is anticipated that we'll probably be installing it at the beginning of May of this year. And then we'll be beginning a four-month trial period where we see if it really works. If it doesn't, we can send it back without paying them. And if it does, we're good to go forward. Any questions on that project?
Well, seeing none at committee level as yet. This went through TAC and through the committee.
Yes.
And this is a an update.
Upgrade? Is that what it is?
It's an it's an update of where we are on the upgrade, I guess.
Yeah.
That's right.
So anyone with a question on that issue before we move on? Anyone in the audience? Seeing no burning questions or raised hands, Mr. Trott, I think we're ready to move on then.
All right. The second item here is to request recommendation of a capital outlay plan for Zone 3. And you can see in your agenda packet, it's laid out there. And kind of as a little background of this, this capital outlay plan is a projection of all the Zone 3 capital projects over the next 8 years. And there's a few reasons we do it. There's multiple reasons we do this. But one of them is to identify some of the needs of Zone 3, some of the capital needs over in the coming years. Another one is to identify projects that we need to request funding for. And as we approach approving our budget here for Zone 3, this helps identify the projects we will be requesting funding for the capital part of the budget. And the other is that we would plan for a consistent expenditures for capital projects every single year to meet the committee's goal that was set for about $550,000 a year. So this really helps us to plan ahead and have a consistent spending every year. I'm just going to go ahead and go through this, and specifically when we're asking for your approval of this outlay plan, it's for this whole plan, but it's also specifically for the projects that we're requesting for this fiscal year that are obviously in the budget are going to be approved for next year. And I think the best way to do this is just to go down the list of projects here one at a time. And if you had questions at the end, you can ask specific questions, and then we'll go to see to approve the whole thing all in one shot. And also, again, just as background, this outlay plan was taken to the TAC and approved, and they actually recommended that this be approved separate from the budget so that we'd have a good plan of our capital portion of the budget before we actually jump into the entire budget. And they, at their last meeting, the TAC endorsed this plan for your recommendation today. So if you look in your agenda packet here, and it's the page that's right before Exhibit A, which has the plan, it kind of helps if you lay it out on both sides. I'm going to go down through the list, it's A through G, of the projects that we're recommending for this next fiscal year and give you a brief summary. Now, there are summary sheets in Exhibit B of this that go through a little bit more detailed summary on every project if you'd like to look at those. Kind of outlines our anticipated schedule and some of the key issues we foresee. But I'll stick to the ones that we're recommending approval for this next year. The first one on there is Arroyo Grande Creek Waterline Crossing at Rodriguez Bridge. This is a previously approved project, and this we're requesting $115,000 in this next fiscal year, and that will be to take the project through completion. As of right now, it's in design. Kind of a little bit of a background on the project is the water line that comes from the dam to the terminal reservoir at the Lopez Water Treatment Plant. There's one water line. It crosses Arroyo Grande Creek at the Rodriguez Bridge crossing, and it's exposed. There's about a 3-foot drop there, and it's encased in concrete, and it's been identified as a hazard for a couple of reasons. One, that it's a fish barrier. And the other, that if we have a large flow through there, you know, our water line is at risk. It's the only water line that comes down to the plant. And so this project is to construct a series of rock structures and pools that will help avoid erosion, undermining of that concrete encasement, and protect it during high flows, and will also provide fish passage. And as I said, we're requesting $115,000, and that's to take it through completion. Just as a schedule note, it won't actually be completed next fiscal year, but we plan on awarding it next fiscal year, and the project will the construction would actually complete early the following fiscal year.
Mr. Nichols,
can we ask questions item by item, or do
you
all wait till?
No. I think if you got a question, let's get it out.
The main question I have is we obviously had $574,000 budgeted for this project. And is this $115,000 in addition to that?
That's correct.
And what caused the addition?
At the beginning of the project, as I understand it, we were looking at a way of doing it that was similar to what we're doing now. But at the beginning, we said, well, is this really the best way to address this issue? You know, to protect the pipeline for years and years to come, we really should do maybe an aerial crossing. And so we looked into an aerial crossing, and we looked into cutting down and digging the pipe in deeper. And so we looked at several different alternatives, and we went out, and what we came to is that the project we're doing now, the rock series of rock structures, is probably the most feasible way as far as cost. And as we got closer and closer to the alternative, we actually got closer and more honed in on a design. And that cost reflects that design cost. And so it's a little bit more than what we had originally anticipated, and that's mainly just because the scope is a little more clear now.
Okay, and that you anticipate that will cover the entire cost?
That's right.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Yes.
Do you have any schematic or anything that would show the previous design that you had allocated the funds out for, and then the change in the design that is going to add this other $115,000?
When we originally requested, I believe there wasn't an actual layout plan design. It was more of a cost based on other projects that were similar.
But you don't have anything.
And the scope wasn't perfectly clear. It was more of an estimate at that time. It was very, very rough at that time.
So you're moving forward, but has the board been presented with the design that previously passed and the changes to the design that now you're asking for another $115,000 for?
Tom, if I might real quickly. There was not a previous design. What this is it's the evolution from a conceptual cost estimate and then into engineers' estimates based on a design approach. And it's pretty common that when we move from a conceptual to starting to really work on designs, that cost estimates can easily change 30% or more. So it is a refinement of the cost estimate based on new information, but it's not a redesign or a new design.
I wondered because he said now it had rocks and pooling. So would that be a series of pools to enable the fish to be able to sort of tear up, you know?
Yes, that's one of the purposes. Okay. So this project will actually address both issues, which is fish passage and protection of our existing
mine. So it's aesthetically different a little bit in the way it's...
Yeah, yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions? The second project is $15,000 request for a sample station relocation at Avila Beach Drive and Shell Beach Drive intersection. And there's an existing sample station that comes off the Lopez pipeline right there, and it is located fairly close to the traveling public and the roadway, and has been identified as a danger. And so this is a fairly minor project. It's to completely relocate it out of the way, so it's not a hazard to the public. Third project here is the Lopez Water Treatment Plant chemical containment improvements. And this arose out of several years ago. We had a coagulant spill at the Lopez Water Treatment Plant that overflowed into Rio Grande Creek. And the Environmental Health Division also requires that we have a plan in place for spill prevention, which we developed this last year. And identified some improvements that we can make to the Lopez Water Treatment Plant to keep spills from going out into Oro Grande Creek, specifically from chemical deliveries and things of that nature. And this is for $65,000 and is anticipated to cover the entire project. Next project is the Lopez 33-inch pigging project, which is just another word for pipeline cleaning. And if you look at the outlay plan here, you see that this is it's estimated to be pretty significant in cost, is at $1.23 million over the next 4 years. And, you know, this again is a preliminary estimate. We just did a pigging project of the 18-inch line successfully, and those costs were based on this, on that project. But what we're really trying to do is, since this is such a significant cost, is this next year we're requesting $30,000 to really look at the feasibility of it. We want to take a look at the last project and see what the how beneficial it really was for increasing capacity and pressure and those types of things, and see if it's worth doing it. So what I anticipate is at the end of the next fiscal year, we'd be coming back to you and to the TAC, of course, and either recommending that this project go forward with a much clearer scope and a revised cost estimate that could be significantly less than what is on here, and going from there. But this would be really to do the initial phases of the project. Any questions?
I might add to that as well. In as Tom had noted in the multi-year capital outlay plan, what we've been doing is working with the TAC and identifying whether or not more pigging is going to be appropriate in the near future. In addition to doing the feasibility evaluation that Tom mentioned, next year and then after that making determinations as to what we may or may not do in pigging in the future, we're also on the Nacimiento project starting to do some basic pigging operations with our own staff. So as we go through the evaluation of whether or not or to what extent do we want to continue pigging on the Lopez system, we'll separately be doing some exercises on the Nacimiento, with the idea being is doing that comparative analysis of do we want to continue to go out to bid in order to do pigging as we have been doing in the Lopez system, or have we learned enough, and can we do this with our existing staff? And if doing so, is it going to be cost beneficial? So there's two aspects: the feasibility work that Tom is speaking to, which is this $30,000, is really specific to analysis of the Lopez system. But separately, the Public Works Department is on the Nacimiento system, looking at what we might be able to do in terms of doing pigging with our own crews, and would that be less expensive than going out to bid? That's not part of your costs, but certainly those results we'll also share with you for your future deliberations on how we might go forward with pigging in the future.
Yeah, and just to add to that, the 18-inch pigging project that we just did, our operators were highly involved in that and learned a good deal of information about what pigging takes and how to do it.
Mr. Nichols.
Do we have basically the same size piping in both projects?
Yes, they are basically the same size. Lengths are different. The other aspect of pigging, though, is what are you getting inside of the pipes? What's building up? And that could very well be different between the two different systems.
And the equipment that you use, you would use the same equipment, and do we own the equipment or...
The Flood Control District owns, we just acquired some pigs for the Nacimiento system. You actually have different sizes for different pipelines. Any particular pig will fit a variety of sizes. They have these things called wings on them, and if anybody ever wonders whether pigs do fly, I guess they do. But in any case, so we have, you know, not we won't have all of the stuff that's necessary for the Lopez system, but we, you know, are starting to build up an inventory.
Okay, thank you.
And just for your information, too, the only part of it that we might have to contract out is, and this is the difference between Nacimiento and here, is in Nacimiento, it can be discharged to land. So after all the dirty water that comes out can be discharged to land, whereas here it'd be likely discharged to storm drain, which eventually leads into Rio Grande Creek, which means that it probably has to be captured and treated and settled out first before it can go there, which can be a significant cost.
Thank you.
The next project is the Rio Grande Creek Habitat Conservation Project. And these, to explain this, this is not for the Habitat Conservation Plan. So when you see this $50,000 request, it's not for advancing the Habitat Conservation Plan. What it is this is more of anticipation of what may come from the Habitat Conservation Plan. So in the Habitat Conservation Plan, we're identifying about $1 million of projects, as Katie was mentioning, to remove fish barriers, certain capital projects to be done to enhance the stream. And what this is, you can see from your outlay plan, is that we have $50,000 every year all the way throughout the next 8 years. And this is really kind of treating it as a bank account, that over the next 20 years, we're suggesting that you put $50,000 aside so when these projects do come about and we do have to do them, they don't have any significant impacts on the other capital projects that we need to have done, and so that the money is essentially there to do those projects when they come up. And that's the whole of that. There is no clear scope as of yet on any of those projects. The next project, the next two projects, let me just give a little background for the next two projects.
Can I ask a quick question?
Yeah.
Regarding the previous item, the stream improvements, do you see that being a linear implementation, or is it going to ramp up quickly first and then taper off?
That's a very good question. To be honest with you, I haven't seen any of the projects that are proposed in the HDP, or if they even have a clear scope. So it would probably depend on those items and what it takes to get those completed, and probably how much money we have at that time.
It's not uncommon for the agreements to say that we will set aside like $50,000 a year, and then what we do is when we've accumulated enough funds, we implement a project with the priorities then being established on which project comes forward. That's kind of the general game plan that we get into the HCPs, and then, of course, nothing ever exactly works as perfect. And so, you know, the recommendation is to start putting a little bit of that in the sinking fund right now to mitigate risks associated with, you know, one-time hits to the budget and stuff is really what that's about.
Any more questions on that? Okay, so the next two projects, we are requesting funds for the completion of them, but we're not proposing that we fully complete them next year. And this is why. If you look at the very last item on your capital outlay plan, it's to purchase adjacent land. And it's projected in the out years, and it's set at $925,000. And this item and these next two items, what they deal with is the security of the Lopez Water Treatment Plant and the terminal reservoir there. Existing right now, if you went out to the plant, you might have seen this, is to the directly to the east of the plant, between the terminal reservoir of the plant and the roadway, the Orcutt Road and Lopez Drive, there is a residential property there. It has multiple residents on it, and their residence is actually very close to some of our facilities. There's not much in the way of a fence between there. You know, in many cases, it's just a three-strand barbed wire fence. And we've been discussing with the TAC potentially purchasing that property for a variety of reasons, for security, for access issues, and for a few other things. And because that is kind of out there and we're looking into that a little more, these next two projects could potentially be revised or go away if we do decide to purchase that property. Now, okay, with all of that in mind, do you have a question? You want to go?
No. Okay. Interesting. Go ahead.
So with all of that in mind, just keep that in the forefront of your mind as I talk about these next two and what we propose to do. And the next project is Lopez perimeter security fencing. Like I said, most of the boundaries of our property for the Lopez Water Treatment Plant and the terminal reservoir are just three-strand barbed wire, which doesn't provide a lot of security. And what we're proposing to do over several years is to replace that fence with security fencing, the kind that you see on Lopez Drive, right, when you pull up to the plant, you know, the chain link with the barbed wire on top of it, and also to make some repairs to the existing fence. And we propose this in several years. We originally were going to propose that the east side be the first year, The east side, again, is that boundary between our facilities and that residential property. Now, because we're looking at, in a little more detail at purchasing this property, we would like to move forward with the security fencing, but we're now proposing that the west side be done first. And so what we're thinking that we'll do next year with this request, $150,000, is to put in the west side fence, but to also do some study into some detail of what it would take to purchase the property next door, and so that we can come back to the TAC and to yourselves and make a recommendation of whether it's really feasible to purchase the property next door. Any questions on that one?
Is that one piece of property? Or?
Yeah, yes, it's a 26-acre parcel.
Okay, and that's on Orchard Road, between Orchard Road and the existing facility.
That's right. And if we did end up purchasing that property, we would still need fence, but the fence wouldn't be on the boundary line. It would be on the along the roadway there.
Yeah. Okay.
And then the final project there is a domestic tank access road. Now, this, I think, is one of the biggest securities. We have a domestic tank for the Lopez Water Treatment Plant that sits up on top of the hill behind the plant, almost right on the border of the property line. And some of the residences are very, very close to this tank. And right now, to access the tank, there's two ways of doing it. You can either go up the mountain on a quad, or you can use their driveway and access back through, which we don't have any legal easement to access it that way. However, that's one of the ways that we've had to access it in the past. And what this project proposes is that we would build a road up the mountain up into the tank, and that we wouldn't have to use this other access that we don't have easement for any longer. And we're asking for $125,000. Again, that covers the entire construction of the project, we anticipate. However, what we're looking at doing, because we're looking at the purchase of this other property, is just doing the environmental portion of that this next year, and also studying a little bit more on what it would take to maybe get an access easement through the other property, and also in combination with looking at what it would take to purchase the property and if that's feasible. And so what would happen is we would do that, and we'd come back to the TAC and present what we recommend. And if we do recommend this project, then we would proceed during either the next fiscal year or at the time that you would approve it.
Okay, Mr. Trott, that ended on your on that particular part of the presentation?
Yes.
All right, so questions? Any other questions on these items? I just remind the committee members that this has been through the Technical Advisory Committee on a couple of occasions, and we've made a number of adjustments over the last several months on it at committee level. So it comes to you with a recommendation for approval from the Technical Advisory Committee, of which I'm a member.
I was just a couple of quick follow-up comments, Tom. I think that the last two items that were a little bit tricky there to explain, you did a nice job on. I guess it would probably be fair to summarize that in the budget request itself, essentially the expenditures on those two different items would go through a work plan, and we would continue to work closely with the Technical Advisory Committee with the idea of phase one of the work plan was the stuff that Tom said we would do immediately. On the access road, we know we have to do environmental review whether we purchase the adjacent property or whether we don't. And then on the fencing, we know we need to do some work on the west side that's independent from the purchase decision of the property on the east side. And so the work plan itself would be just to do those initial work efforts while we're further looking into whether or not the purchase of the land is feasible or not. But we would only move forward with that first description of work that Tom had talked about. And we would be doing the fence work, doing the environmental work, and looking at the property acquisition in close conjunction with the advisory committee so that we made sure that we stayed on that work plan and that overall strategy. And then my other comment is that $550,000 bottom line is an amount that in prior years, either last year or the year before, in working with your agencies, we targeted that as being, you know, the annual expenditure for capital outlay. And so those were my sort of follow-up comments.
The other thing, since you're up, Pavo, is that approval of this CIP doesn't in any way jeopardize our approval process on the budget itself.
That's correct. We wanted to sort of make sure they were separate items so that the advisory committee would, you know, look at the capital outlay plan and have the ability to look at all those details or questions at your discretion, separate from the budget process.
Okay, very good. Any further questions? I don't see any on the committee level. I see one in the audience, so please step forward and give us your name and where you live and what your question is.
Good Merrily Hyman, Chairman Gary and Commission. I'm from Pismo Beach. I was very interested in B on your list of capital improvement projects. Hadn't heard of it. The residents of the northern part of Pismo Beach, in the Shell Beach area, have expressed interest, as well as the Pismo Beach as a whole, in connecting to our surrounding cities in the bay and the trail systems. And we're just, you know, it's piecemeal now, but eventually it'd be really nice to connect. And for if this sample relocation is for Avila Beach and Shell Beach Road, one of the connecting elements we'd like to do is to connect Shell Beach with the Bob Jones Trail. That would seem to be a nice kind of concept. Whether it's possible, we don't know. This is a future thinking. And if you're going to be moving this back for pedestrian and bike and cars, I don't know exactly what, but it would be a shame to have to move it once and then find out if we're doing a plan, a trail through there, that you'd have to move it a second time. So I would guess we'd like to know what you have in mind.
Okay, and I think Tom could probably describe it a little bit better. The sample stations themselves are pretty non-intrusive type of facilities. They're essentially almost hose bibs. The idea is just moving it slightly. Even in the event that a trail came through and it had to relocate again in the future, I think that doing that associated with the larger work associated with the trail, it would be very inexpensive. The $15,000 cost estimate is high in regards in terms of it's just a standalone work item. You know, but again, when you have to do utility relocations, when you're putting in trails or roads or pikes, you know, you already have construction crews out there, and relocations that are done associated with other work tends to be much less expensive than, you know, a single standalone item. But Tom, maybe you can describe the facility in a little bit better detail than I can.
Yeah, the sample station right now is actually it's in an underground box, and the reason it poses a hazard is because it's in an underground box and so close to the roadway that we have bollards all around it. So you got these big yellow steel poles all around it, and that's protect workers as they go and they sample at that location. When we move it off the roadway, there's no need for the bollards anymore. So really, all it's going to be is an underground box. And you could essentially even put the path right over the top of it. I mean, they would have to close the path if they wanted to access it. But really, it would be a pretty simple thing to relocate in the future, and it shouldn't be obtrusive in any by any means.
I guess my thought on that issue, though, is that if Ms. Hyman has an idea of where the right of way for the future trail is going to go, we can avoid it if we know, and if we don't, there's not much we can do, right? Do we know where it's going to go as yet? Okay.
Well, maybe the trail could go around the box.
Yeah, it's about the size of a fire hydrant, so.
You know, I think what Paavo mentioned is pretty noteworthy, that it's a fairly easy thing to relocate and fairly inexpensive as well.
All right, anyone else from the audience with a question or comment on that item? So we're looking for an approval of the capital improvement plan, the 8-year plan, from the committee at this point. Is that right, Mr. Ogren?
Yes.
I will move that we accept the plan as presented this evening.
I'll second.
All right, we got a motion and a second. Do we have any other discussion? I'm not seeing any burning questions at committee level. I don't see any at the audience level unless a hand goes up. So with that, all in favor?
Aye.
Are there any opposed? It looks like it's unanimous.
Can we take a 5?
And AGP, we're going to take a 5-minute. Good idea. I was starting to worry myself.
My only question is on
you'll probably get that fixed.
Somebody would stink about that.
Yeah. We need to get Oceano on the map. Okay, thank you. So our five-minute break is over, and we're more or less back in order and ready to go again. The next item on our agenda is the fiscal year 2011-2012 budget, and in terms of processing, my understanding is that tonight we're going to have a very brief review of what's going on and where we're going with the budget. We're going to tell our delegates, all of us being delegates, to go back to our governing bodies and review the document, get input, get direction to the delegates, and come back and consider the budget for approval in April. And it looks like Thursday, April 21st is the date that has been set. So with that, if anybody has any corrections to my proposed schedule and processing, please so state. And if not, Mr. Ogren.
I'm not sure. Do we know the location for our special meeting?
We don't know the location.
Okay. It is here?
Oh, it's at Arroyo Grande. It says.
Okay.
Well, it said that.
All right. So it's at Arroyo Grande. It'll be at 6:30 on the 21st of April. And the sole item, as far as I know, on that agenda will likely be the budget consideration. And with that, Ms. Jenny Brunick can go over the document with us and tell us what's going on.
Good evening. Tonight I will be presenting an overview, can you hear me, of the Flood Control Zone 3 budget. Tonight's presentation, I'll go through the budgeting process and give you an overview of 2011-12 budget and answer any questions after the presentation. The budget review has four steps, which are as follows. First, the budgets books were distributed to the advisory committee on January 20th of this year at our last meeting. We also mailed out the budget books to both the finance committee and the technical advisory committee as well. And in February, public works staff met with the finance committee, members of your districts, where we reviewed the budget. We discussed some of the line items on the budget book. We also met with the Technical Advisory Committee for a budget overview. Now we're returning back today with, obviously the plan was to have the budget endorsed, but that's not going to happen.
Well, just let me jump in for a second. Logistically, it wasn't possible for the various agencies, councils, or board to review the budget in time to give their delegates direction for tonight. So that's why we're going to try to do it in April.
Okay. Let's see. So next, I'll go into the budget a little bit. This slide is the graph that shows our estimated versus actual billings for Zone 3. As you can see, we've been pretty consistent. We've been less than estimated consistently, I should say. And the variables on the budget for the expenditures have decreased by 2.8%. Operations and maintenance has decreased by 4.8%. And this is due to decrease in labor costs, such as we're having a reduction of a one-third full-time employee at the water treatment plant, which also includes the overhead being decreased as well. And let's see, there's also the decision for the district not to fill the water systems superintendent who will retire this year. Our debt services decreased less than a percent, and this should remain the same throughout since we've already began paying principal and interest on the SRF loan. Capital outlay decreased by 1.1% from last year. And again, this has to do with Tom's presentation of our target of $550,000. And our 2011-12 billings are less than the projected five-year estimates that were provided to your agencies in August of 2010. And the recommended action is that the committee endorse the 2011-12 budget. And I have
concludes
so this. If there are any questions.
All right, very well. Questions for Ms. Brunick, or since he's here, Mr. Ogren, on the budget, and then as delegates, be prepared to take it back to your council or board, as the case may be, for consideration in time for the April meeting. So, questions?
Well, just a comment, if you don't mind, Mr. Chairman. It's already been vetted through the city of Pismo Beach, and so the city, I don't know if it was, I can't recall if it was a formal resolution, but the motion was, or consensus was, to authorize me on behalf of the city to adopt the budget.
Okay,
so,
great.
So that's been done.
Thank you for that. Anything else? No?
It's wonderful to be so timely.
All right, so we will take this item, bring this item back to the committee on April 21st, 2011, at Roy Grandy, 6:30. And anything else? Anything from the audience? Anybody got a question on the budget before we move on?
I do have a quick question, Mr. Gehring.
Yes. Go ahead.
When we come back in April, would you like us to do the same presentation, or are we? Is there anything that you'd like us to bring back?
What's the pleasure of the committee?
I would not think so. I think we will probably have some questions and need some clarification, but...
And everybody's got a copy, right?
Yes.
Good. Are you?
I have a copy. I don't have it with
me
tonight.
Okay, good.
Chairman, my thought might be as the other agencies review it in their chambers as well, if there's specific questions that come up, then we might get those from you and then be able to, you know, tailor a presentation in April,
before
too.
Before the meeting.
Yeah. Yeah, just, you know, again, depending on what comes out of your the deliberation in the chambers of your agencies.
I kind of thought we'd wait and hit you all at once.
Mr. Chairman,
that works too.
I have one question.
Okay, good, great.
I asked this question to Mr. Chisholm, and he gave me an answer, and maybe it was tiring, but I didn't understand it, so I'm going to ask you, someone from staff.
Sure.
And it has to do with...
What page?
Let's say page 14. The very back, there's a table entitled Flood Control Zone 3 Cost Per Acre Foot for Fiscal Year 2011-12. And looking at the first row, Lopez Dam Bonds, and then the third column, which is of interest for me, City of Pismo Beach, I noticed that value, that it's much lower than the other jurisdictions.
I think it's your property values that are paying it off. But go ahead, Mr. Ogren.
That's the quick answer is because the assessed value in Pismo Beach is significantly higher than the other agencies. What we can turn to sort of explain how those allocations work would be page 12. It's an interesting item that the City of Pismo Beach negotiated into the contracts in the year 2000. In order to get credit for the assessed values within Pismo Beach. That was part of my history with Public Works Department has been working on a lot of our contractual relationships. And so I was staff leading the renegotiation of the contracts in 2000, which was necessary prior to being able to sell bonds for the remediation project. And the approach on the remediation project was similar to the financing of the facilities originally in the 1960s, and that is that a portion, approximately 50% of the project, is paid for via the water billings to the different agencies, the municipalities, and about 50% was paid by taxpayers within Zone 3. You know, it's an assessed valuation tax that goes a property tax against all properties. So anybody in particular, individual within your city's boundaries, would be paying in two forms. One, a little amount through the water rates, and then secondly, a specific line item that they would see on their property tax bills. Part of the benefit of allocating some of the project costs on property tax bills is then that the dam and the releases downstream do benefit the groundwater basin, and they benefit agricultural interests. And because the agricultural interests are within the tax base, then the agricultural interests have historically, since the 1960s, helped to pay for the dam and the facilities. And so we're looking at how are we going to pay for the seismic remediation project. It was sort of an obvious question of, well, why don't we follow the same approach as what happened in the 1960s? And so we did, and the contracts were revised so that a portion of the cost of the remediation is paid via the water rates and a portion is paid through the tax rates. Since the 1960s, of course, Proposition 13 and Prop 218 had been passed. And so it was really quite an effort in order to get that item on the tax ballot. It required two-thirds voter approval, and we ended up getting about 70%. The efforts leading prior to that election is, you know, every city council, every agency looked at it. Everybody endorsed it. And we kind of believe that, you know, if all the governmental agencies agreed on something, then maybe the voters would. And, in fact, they did. Financially, it was a good decision because general obligation bonds paid for through tax rates generally are more secure and they'll get us a better interest rate. And then, of course, it helped to relieve costs that would have otherwise been borne on water rates. Well, during the contract negotiations, Pismo Beach specifically was addressing the fact that, hey, you know, our tax base and ultimately our ratepayers are going to end up paying more because we have more tax base. And so the calculation that's shown on page 12, what it does is it allocates the debt service costs amongst all agencies based on your share of the water supply. And then what it does is it credits out for each agency the amount of tax revenues that are generated on our tax bills through the general obligation portion of the debt. And so because Pismo Beach has a larger tax base, and it's really a larger tax base in a ratio as compared to your water entitlement. And what this particular year's estimate in column C shows that your agency's obligation is $292,043. The estimated collection on the tax bills will be $283,839, and so the amount that your water fund has to pay is only $8,204. The contracts further went on to say, though, however, if your tax base were to build up so great as to that $8,204 actually becomes a negative number, you don't get to go into the negative. You know, your tax base will only credit your bill to the extent that you've had debt allocated to it, but it won't go back and help subsidize operating costs. So you're almost, you know, to where you can be, and maybe another 2 years you won't have any more, you know, debt service on the remediation project billed through your water rates because your property taxpayers are paying for it through their tax bills.
Thank you.
Sure.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Good. All right. Any other questions come out of that discussion? Anybody? I'm not seeing any. I'm not seeing any at the audience level. So with that, we'll be back on April 21st on that item. And let's move on. I would like to insert an item in the agenda, public comment. And with that, I'll open up the dais to anyone from the public who has a comment. I'd like to raise any issues. Tell us who you are and what your issue is. Yes, Mary Lee.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. My question is, does any part of Zone 3 come under the Coastal Commission oversight? Do we need to get any permits and such from them? And the reason I'm asking is because last week, the Army Corps of Engineers and Pismo Beach asked to protect their infrastructure, particularly two sewage lift stations, and were denied a permit. So we're concerned, deeply concerned, that we cannot protect our infrastructure. So I wanted to know if this body also is subject to such regulation.
Well, Mr. Ogren could probably answer that better.
Yes, we certainly are subject to permitting through the Coastal Commission. You know, any of the county's coastal development permits that are issued through our planning commission and are in the coastal zone are subject to appeal to the Coastal Commission. I would not anticipate that we have any facilities that we deem to be at risk. You know, and I would imagine that some of the pigging projects that we did before, we might have, but those are maintenance projects even, so I'm not sure that those required a CDP or anything, but... you know, certainly at the county and, you know, all of the county operations, all the governmental options are subject to Coastal Commission. We've had a number. We were up at Coastal last Friday as well. But, again, I don't foresee any of the Zone 3 issues as interacting with Coastal Commission. Kind of looking in case Katie or Tom envision any, and I'm not seeing any.
Nobody's admitting to anything.
Yeah.
Ms. Hyman, I think you might have a question.
Sort of an addendum, Mr. Chairman. Part of the objection of the Coastal Commission was, well, the erosion is so slow, and can you provide us more data? This is after 4 years of data we developed. Give us more data on the predictions of episodic events that might cause rapid erosion all at once, because you know erosion isn't an inch a year. It happens in big falls. And everyone is going episodic means you can't predict, but they wanted data for prediction. And then it was fate or something. But the next day we had the tsunami and the earthquake in Japan. The other issue they had was move your sewage pump stations. And the fact that this would be 10 years in planning and $50 million project by our estimate, one of the commissioners said, that's not our concern.
Okay, thank you for that. Did that raise any questions or issues on the part of any commissioners there? Seeing none. And anyone else from the audience? Any other comments? Seeing none. How about comments from the committee members? We'll start with Mr. Nichols.
I have none.
None? And Mr. Bartis? No?
My only comment is on April 21st, just for your information, I will not be here. I'll be on vacation, but Mr. Edwagi will be attendance.
Great.
For the city.
And you'll speak to him ahead of time, perhaps.
He
already knows.
He already knows.
Okay, thanks. Ms. Hansen?
And I have no comment.
The only thing I would say is I think the staff's effort on the budget has been great. I think we're moving in the right direction. Anybody else? Any other comments? All right. We're adjourned. We are adjourned to April 21st.